The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay, well, let's get started. It's a last lecture, so I dress up for you. Because at the end, you're going to evaluate me. Yeah, well, I have a program review today going on. That's a real story. So you have your term paper due. I have my report due today, too. So let's think about what I was talking in the last lecture. And we moved on to discuss liquid. In a way, I'm not doing real justice to liquid. Liquid is very complex. And it's much harder to deal with, and we're spending very little time on it. So I just want to give you some idea what I think important when we think about liquids. So at the end of last lecture, I was discussing. Not working?
It's working. It's just that.
Okay. Probably I should put on this side. Okay, so I was discussing the Brownian motion, and this was actually started by Einstein, and so in many ways Einstein is really the starting, the grandfather of this other branch of statistical thermodynamics. His work eventually led to the linear response theory. This is not very well known. And that's Einstein's PhD thesis. When he did his PhD, he actually worked on the Brownian motion. And we said that there, what his objective there at the time was really trying to determine the diameter of molecules. The concept was there, but there was no measurement. It was trying to think about the way how you can determine the diameter of the molecules. So he did this Gedanken experiment, and thinking you have a solution, you have solute dilute particles in this solution, and these particles are the big molecules that with the diameter which he wants to decide. And first he say, with these particles inside, what's the equation of states for these particles? And he derived sort of ideal gas law type of equation for those dilute particles. P is the pressure, additional pressure developed due to this particle. That's the osmotic pressure. And so you can say from here, you can also write P equals NKBT. That's really just like the ideal gas law. And the other, so this is one point, one of his starting point. And the other point he wants is to think about when now you got the pressure. And this pressure can be measured. There's a osmometer. It's just measure the pressure. You can have a half permeable membrane. You can have the solution go to the one side, solute is staying on the other side. You can measure the pressure difference generated. And of his theory, the other part is based on the drag coefficient. When you have a particle in the solution, it's doing this random motion. What's the drag on this? And it's very well known in fluid mechanics that the drag on small particles, right? Very small particle, you don't have fluid separation. So this is the Stokes flow. So you have Stokes flow with the force on each particle is 3 pi d mu times the velocity of the particle, right? Now, when you have, if you think about the taking a control volume, okay, and doing the force balance on these particles, you have the pressure at x. This is the x. This is the x plus dx. You have pressure at x and another pressure at px plus dx. So when you have a pressure difference and you have force on the particle, and this force at the steady state, you should balance the drag force on the particle, right? So if you think about the force balance, so we have in the px direct minus px plus dx, that's the net force on this control volume. And let's say if the area is AC, cross-section area is AC, and so that's the force pushing, and the balance it, the drag is the F force times on each particle times the number of particles in the volume, and this should, at steady state, equals zero. And so we just plug in for each particle, we have the Stokes force, and we do an expansion, so I have AC dx. This is the differential volume of this element, and dp dx times that's the Taylor expansion for this term. And here I have 3 pi d mu times u times dn equals 0. Right? So dn is number of particles divided by volume. That's the particle density. So I have dp dx and minus 3 pi d mu u times the number density equals 0. dp dx already, Einstein already derived this, as I said, the ideal types of law for the particle, diluted particle. So you can say this is a dn dx. So I have kbt dn dx minus 3 pi d mu u times n. Now, what is u times n? The velocity of the particle times the particle number density. Number of particles per unit volume times the motion, the velocity of moving. Flux, right? So this is really just the number flux of the particle. So he has then the flux of the particles. Particle flux is related to the gradient. So he has kbt 3 pi d mu dn dx. Right? So I may have a sign error, right? So if you think this is a fixed law, the flux should be diffusion against the gradient, right? The diffusion. So what is the, where is the, so this is the force on the front, and if those are the force on the particle, if the particle is moving. Okay, let me just move on. Yes? Ah, yes, I'm sorry. Right, so this, from here to here, you got a minus dpx. So there you got a minus sign, right? So essentially what they derive is the fixed diffusion law, right? And with this coefficient as your diffusivity, so diffusivity equals kbt 3 pi d mu. And the mu is the viscosity, dynamic viscosity of the fluids, right? So diameter is what he wants to decide. That's the diameter. So how he can decide diameter? Because A is diffusivity. So if you drop a drop of milk in water, you can measure the diffusion, right? You have a drop of milk in the water, you measure the diffusion length, the length that is diffused is, six diffusivity times the time. So you just measure as a function of time how large is the diffusion. You can determine the diffusivity, and from diffusivity, you know the viscosity, you can determine the diameter of the molecule, right? Milk molecule. So that's Einstein's motivation of determining the diameter of the molecule, and through this, he developed the first theory on the Brownian motion. And this, by the way, is an example. If you read chapter 6, you will see that between the electrical diffusivity and the electron mobility, there is a relation, similar relation. And that relation we call the Einstein relation. Einstein didn't work on the electrons. He worked on the molecules. And this is an example later on, a consequence, you can say, or example of the so-called fluctuation dissipation theorem. Fluctuation dissipation theorem. So this is just a consequence or example of the theorem. What does that theorem mean? The viscosity is a measure of dissipation in the fluid, right? And the diffusivity is a random walk. The particle is doing random walk. That's the fluctuation part. So the fluctuation is related to the dissipation. And this is there is a very general fluctuation dissipation theorem that applies to, say, wide range of problems. So you find this relationship between the coefficient. And again, this is also, say, Einstein relation, right? Okay, so this was Einstein actually did not just stop here. He said this suggests one way to determine the molecular diameter. Einstein also suggests another way to determine the molecular diameter, and this is by measuring the viscosity of the fluids. So he measured the solution and measured the original one just without the solid inside. And so compare the viscosity difference, right, with the particle inside, without the particle inside. And he did all the derivation, and he showed, I'm not going to go through it, he showed that viscosity ratio, so this is the solution, and this is the base fluid, and that equals 1 plus 2.455. Phi is the volume fraction. Okay? So this is the volume fraction of the particles in the fluids. And again, you can say because from here he can determine the viscosity of the fluid, of the particle, and through the and then he can determine the diameter of the molecule. And so from Einstein's, this basic work Einstein did, so this was really the start of another line of developing alternative to the Maxwell's treatment, right? Maxwell deal with dilute gas. If you go to read Einstein's paper, he was starting with Maxwell, he said, want to develop alternative treatment to the Maxwell. And and the alternative, which I'm not going to, this is a starting point, I hinted before, the development, their long sequence of development, from here, the Brownian motion, a generalized Brownian motion is the non-given equation.
So to generalize the Brownian motion, the Langevin equation just say, is rewriting Newton's second law. So Langevin equation say, rewriting second law, so this is the instantaneous velocity of a particle. Okay. Again, this is applying for all Brownian motion. Okay. And so instantaneous velocity, acceleration, mass times acceleration equals force. So it's just rewriting the Newton's second law. But the Langevin equation just split the force into two terms. One is when you do Brownian motion, you always have a drag force, right? That drag force is proportional to the velocity, to the speed of the particle. So the first term is a determinative term. This is a more like a effective viscosity, and it's proportional to the speed of the particle. So that's one term. And the other term is the noise. That's the driving force for the motion, Brownian motion. So this is a random driving force. Okay, and this is the Langevin equation. It looks very simple, right? Of course, the problem is this driving force is a random source. So there are some the basic Langevin equation will say the time average of this source is zero, and there's no correlation between the driving force and the velocity of the particle. Correlation means if you do a statistical average, every instant there is a force locking on the particle, but at the end, what direction the particle is going, there's no correlation. That's the idea behind the Brownian motion. And also, this driving force is just instantaneous. So if you have two different time, the correlation is just a delta S. So it's a constant times delta S. That's the strength. It's only when the S, there's no, the next instant driving force is not related to the driving force in the previous step, right? So with those conditions, you can actually solve the Langevin equation. And the solution, I gave a solution, not a so rigorous derivation in my book. And from there, you can show, for example, the diffusion is related to you can basically show this relationship. So this is a part I'm not going to go into the detail. And from Langevin equation, further, this eventually developed into the linear response theory. And linear response theory in my book is treated in chapter 10. We are not going to discuss this linear response theory. It's a pretty lengthy treatment. So what I'm going to do next is actually coming back really to think what's the major difference in terms of transport of fluids, liquid, compared to air molecules, the gas. And if you say all the previous treatment when we deal with diluted electron molecules, photons, it's more like a kinetics. Okay, so there are books, kinetic theory, that will cover a lot of the material I cover for electrons, photons, and gas molecules. So in those treatment, it's really the kinetic motion, the motion of these carriers, energy carriers, that's dominant in transport. But in liquid, it's the motion is usually not a major part. It is contributing to the transport, but it's really the potential interaction, the force, direct force interaction, that's the most important part. So when you really think about liquid, you should think about the potentials, you should think about the forces. And then when you go to micro-nano, then what are the potential at the interface? What are the forces at the interface? Those are the important questions. And because in terms of the particle, if you think about kinetics, in kinetics theory, we talk about the mean free path. That's the distance those air molecules travel before they collide with another air molecule, right? But then you go to liquid, that mean free path is very small. The liquid molecule will just move to probably wiggle to the next side, and they don't travel a lot distance, like 100 angstrom is a huge distance in terms of if you think about liquid. They don't travel that far at all because the atomic diameter is, say, 1 or 2 angstrom, right? So it's really when they move, they will collectively drag through the potential direction, cause the surrounding fluids to move. And then this potential interaction, there are different range. There are forces that's very short range. There are forces that's long range. Right? If potential is important for liquid, you should understand those different forces, short range, long range forces. And there are two major forces, two major kinds. One is, you think of this more like a van der Waals force. And the other is the electrostatic, double layer force. Okay? And all those could be traced back to, at the end, all the force interaction is traced back to charge interaction, even double layer or van der Waals forces, all those trace back to the charge interaction. So what I'm going to talk next is to give you a quick go through some of this basic force interaction. And I just want to use this 40 minutes to show that don't get scared. You can build up this interaction, understand it. If you sit there, just starting from the basic. And this basic is the Coulombia interaction, Coulomb force. So forces and potentials. And force, of course, is related to potential. So force is the gradient of the potential. Right, negative gradient of potential. So when we talk about force, we can also just talk about the potential. It's equivalent. And so what are the, as I said, the basic interaction is really just a positive charge, a negative charge, or positive-positive charge, positive-negative charge. Those are the electrostatic interaction. And so you should be able to write the Coulomb's law. What's the either in force or the potential if you have distance between the charge? What's the potential here? Let's say this is a, I can generalize, this is a charge 1, this is a charge 2. It doesn't have to be positive or negative, right? Coulomb potential. Huh? Somebody should remember it. So Q1, Q2, 4 pi epsilon, right? Epsilon is the dielectric constant. So epsilon is in vacuum times the relative dielectric constant, right? Electrical permittivity times the dielectric constant. That gives you the epsilon. So this is the potential here. And starting from this, you can build many more useful potentials. You can, for example, you can take a what's the a dipole. So you have a dipole is a positive negative charge, and now if you have another charge interact with the dipole, what's the combined potential of this interaction, right? A charge interacts with a dipole. And we can treat this problem quite easily. So we establish a coordinate. Let's say the separation between this charge and the dipole distance is r. And the dipole is a pair of charge that has both positive and negative, equal amount positive and negative, and separation very small, right? So this is, let's say, this is a Q positive, this is a Q negative, and this separation is very small, and distance, average distance between this charge Q, I want the interaction potential of this charge Q with this dipole. So this distance is R, and you can write down the Coulomb potential between this positive, this small q and the positive q, small q and negative q. And you sum this up together, that gives you the interaction potential for the charge with that dipole, right? So we can do the a little bit math here. And this interaction, let's say if the angle here is theta, angle is theta, and the distance is d, okay? So there's a half above, half below in my coordinate system, and q interact with this minus q, so I have q minus q, and 4 pi epsilon, and then r is this distance, right? Right, and the other, so this is R1, this is this R, other distance is R2, okay, R1, you can write it using the, so treat this as a triangle, and so I have R1 is R minus D, right angle triangle, half D cosine theta, square. Okay, so this is a r. That's the from this point to the charge, and the distance here is a half d. That's a half d here, and times cosine theta. So this is this distance. So I have this section square plus this other section square. The other section, I can, because R is relatively large compared to D, so I can just do R, this is R minus D divided by 2 cosine theta, that's from here to here, and then this distance is R times sine theta, so D divided by half sine theta square. So that's, this is R1, and R2, the other potential is Q interact with the positive charge, so I have Q, and this potential interaction again is 4 pi epsilon R plus D divided by 2 cosine theta square plus D divided by 2 sine theta square, right? So that's the writing this two interactions, Q interact with positive Q, Q interact with negative Q, and that's combined Coulomb potential. And if you use the fact that if R is much larger than D, you can rewrite this equation potential and simplify it into, from here, you will get the phi as R theta equals then Q beta cosine theta and 4 pi epsilon R square. And this beta is Q times D. That's the dipole moment. So this is dipole moment of the dipole here, And that's the interaction potential. So you can say, originally, Coulomb potential between two charge is inverse R, right? Now, with one charge interact with a dipole, from the basic Coulomb potential, I get inverse R squared, right? And if you do the same, you do the two dipole-dipole interaction, right? Dipole-dipole interaction is one verse interaction. Okay? What is one verse potential there? Anybody remember? 6 power. You can go do that math, similar to what we do here. You will find out if it's a dipole-dipole, your interaction is a constant divided by 6. So all that can be built. My point is all those could be built from basic Coulomb interaction between two charge. So you don't need to, don't be scared. And you start with the basic there. And so from this point charge interaction, you can also build the interaction of one particle or one charge with a surface. Because the surface means that you got a lot of charge in the solid region, right? You integrate to get the potential of one charge or one particle with the other surface. And if you go to look at the book, so for example, from here, you can go to find out what's the potential, interaction potential of atom. Okay, atom, you can think of as dipole. It has both positive and negative charge, right? So what's the potential interaction of atom with the solid? And so here the separation is D, okay? And you can take any other atom in the solid. That's a dipole-dipole interaction, right? Between this atom and any other atom in the solid, it's a dipole-dipole interaction. What you need to do is just to sum up all those dipole-dipole interaction and to find out what's the interaction potential of this atom with the solid. And you can do so, because you already know that this atom and this two atom interaction is C minus R 6 power, right? This R is, of course, this R. That's, here is the R, the separation between the two. So you have to find out this R, which is a D. If you, this is your coordinate, this is your, you can use a cylindrical coordinate. Maybe I should do the, okay, this one, let me take a capital R in the, and this one, I take an X, right? So as long as you can express this R in terms of coordinate R and the X, and also the separation D, you can find out, integrate over the whole volume, you will find out the interaction potential of an atom with a surface. And again, let me skip, and you will you can derive it, and this will show that you get this 6 D cubic power. So now it changed to cubic. It's not square, it's not 6 power, it's cubic power. It's just math, right? So it's cubic and pi C n. Well, n is the atomic density, the density of the atoms in the solid, right? So you can build from one atom to another atom, to another solid. And if you can do that, you can build the interaction potential, or those interaction potential between one solid and the other solid. Because the other, if you have one solid, this side, and the other solid, you just integrate, you take any of this interact with the other side. And again, you integrate both sides, right? So if you do that integration, you will get the potential. So the interaction potential between two parallel plates, solid, and this one have phi equals minus A and 12 pi d square. Here is d cubic, and there is d square. D square means the decay is slower, right? R6 power decay is pretty fast. Square is relatively slow. And you have potential, the force is a gradient of that, right? So the force is a cubic, because this is a square, and you can get the gradient of this with respect to D gives you the force between the two surfaces. So you can find out the potential and the force interaction, and all those interaction, whether it's called it's a 6th power or 3rd power or 2nd power, we call it the Van der Waals force. Because this is between atoms, between atoms, right? Here I started with one atom. So it's more like a summation of all the dipoles in both regions. The region 1 that interact with region 2. You sum all the dipole-dipole interactions. And this A, in the case of two solid 1 and solid 2, this A has a special name that's called the Hamaker constant. Okay? And the Hamaker constant is related to the density pi square and C, that's the Van der Waals, atomic Van der Waals interaction, and times N1 times N2. That's the atomic density in both regions. So, but this is really just based on doing the summation of this dipole with this region, and that's one way to do it. There are also other theory. Okay, this is just you can see when we do this summation, we didn't consider the dipole-dipole interaction within each material, right? We just consider dipole-dipole interaction between the two materials. So it's not a really complete, always right. And so because of this, you can, although here it seems the Hamaker constant is always a positive, but actually could also have negative Hamaker constant. The Hamaker constant could be both negative, positive, and negative. And if it's positive, so the interaction force between two surfaces is what? Attractive or repulsive? Well, let's say if A is larger than zero, the force is negative gradient phi, right? Right? The force potential, the force is negative. The force is a negative, interaction force is negative, means it's attracting each other. Right? Positive is repulsing each other. So most of the time, the Van der Waals force between two surfaces attract each other. But you can also have cases where they repulse each other. So this is one major force. And the other major force, so this is a Van der Waals force. And the other major force interaction is the electric double layer interaction. Okay, so this is again Coulomb origin. It's the charge interaction. But this interaction is more direct. It's because so when you have a solid, you put it into liquid. And there are two situations. One is the solid atom dissociate. Okay, some species can dissociate into the liquid. And this could be not just a species, it could be just the ions dissociate, right? So if it dissociate, the ions dissociate, then you got the charge difference. You got the ion, let's say suppose if positive ions dissociate into the liquid, so you got the ions here, and then you have a negative ion in the solid, right? So just to think about the simple case, if you have, probably not a realistic case, but if you have sodium chloride, okay, sodium come off, sodium is a positive charge in the water, and chloride, if it just stay on the surface. Of course, if it's in water, sodium chloride all dissolved, right? But so you can have negative ions here, and negative ions in the solid, they do not move. Positive ions in the liquid, they can move, right? So in that case, you will form a building potential, right? Because you have positive and negative region, positive charge region, negative charge region, there's going to be a potential buildup, right? So if you actually zoom into this region, there could be a few positive ions just stuck on the surface. They don't move. But there are a lot more ions, they are in the liquid, they can move. So those ions that stuck on the surface are the so-called Stern layer. Okay? So this layer is very thin, it's typically just a one atomic layer, Stern layer. And the so from here, the ones that can move with the ones that do not move, you effectively form like a capacitance layer, right? Between positive and negative charge. And this positive and negative layer is the electric double layer. Okay? And how you can determine the potential, this is just one case. I said it's the dissociation of atoms, of ions from the solids. The other case is you have a liquid that's already solution. You have salt, you have sodium chloride in water that's already have sodium ion and chloride ion in, positive and negative. And once you put a solid there, the solid may attract more of the negative ion, so you got a positive counter ion in the solid. Again, in that case, you form the double layer, right? So once you have this double layer, if you are an electric engineer, you know that's similar to a p-n junction. You have space, you have charge region, you have positive negative charge region. You will form a building potential. There's a what's the potential? You can see from positive to negative direction, right? So there is a potential drop. And this potential drop can be related to, so if the, this is the, on the solid species, the ion species, and when it's related to the case, if there's no potential drop, what's the zero potential, when the case of zero potential, what's the ion concentration on the solid surface? And then it's related to the charge, the potential, and the KBT. Right? It's just a Boltzmann statistics. Okay? This is the Boltzmann distribution. This is the potential energy. So when you got the potential energy there, some of the ions have to be above that potential energy. So this is the number of ions in the case when you got the double layer. And this this relation is in the electro chemistry is called the Nernst equation. Okay, so effectively, what it tells you is if you can measure the concentration of the ions at the zero potential and the case where you have actually the ions imbalance, if you measure the concentration difference, you can determine that potential developed. And you can actually do the potential measurement. This is their standard equipment to measure this potential developed between solid surface and the liquid. And of course, here is expressed in terms of ions in the solid. You can also express it in terms of ions in the liquid. Okay, and from there, if you have a charge imbalance, you have a field, then you have a distribution of the ions near the surface. And again, this comes back to very similar to the case of a semiconductor. When you have a p-n junction, you have the charge distribution going from one side of the junction to the other side. Okay. In fact, if you go to check the p-n junction theory, it was the solution theory was developed ahead of p-n junction theory. So if you go to check the original paper like written by Shockley, who developed this p-n junction theories, he actually goes back to the solution theory. This solution theory was originally called the Debye-Hockel theory. Okay, so Debye and Hockel worked on the ionic solution, the surface region there. So you can go to solve just as the same way as you deal with the p-n junction. I'm doing the reverse. The history is the other way. If you go to you can go to solve the potential distribution in the double layer region by solving the one of the Maxwell equations. So this is the electrical displacement, the net charge. This is the charge in the liquid side. Okay, the net charge, positive, negative together. What's the net imbalance of the charge in that region? And the electrical displacement. So this is the E times the electric field. So we have then E is epsilon 0, epsilon R, and D square electric field. Again, the field is related to the potential, electrostatic potential, right? So E equals minus gradient of electrostatic potential phi. So I have electrostatic potential D square, and equals the external charge, right? And the external charge distribution is the Boltzmann distribution. What's the concentration of charge, local charge as a function if you take your coordinate, right? So take a coordinate in the x direction, you can go to solve for this. So here the charge distribution is summation of both positive and negative, so all the species, and each species, how much charge, so this is the number of charge by each species and the electrical electron unit, and density at equilibrium times exponential minus psi, so this is Zie divided by kBT psi as a function. So this is the electrostatic potential. Yeah, so the electrostatic potential. And you can see here you got the equation to determine the electrostatic potential distribution in the double layer region. Okay? And the problem is this equation is actually quite difficult to solve because the I should really use this same psi, the electrostatic potential. So here is in the exponential, and here is the second order derivative. And this equation is called the Poisson-Boltzmann equation. So when dealing with solutions, double layers, you encounter frequently this type of Poisson-Boltzmann equation, and there are people solving these equations to look at the biotechnology use a lot of those things. The DNA separation, all this is based on the electric double layer and the electrokinetic flow. So I'm not going to go to solve these equations, and there's no exact solution, and you can make approximations. At the end, you'll find out what's important is from this solution, you find out that the double layer decays exponentially, okay? And that decay length, this is the Debye length, delta is Debye length, okay? And this decay length is controlled by the concentration of ions. So this is Z square E square concentration at equilibrium, and epsilon 0, epsilon R, KBT. So you can say the smaller concentration, the longer is the Debye length, right? And dielectric constant larger, the longer the Debye length. So you get it's a characteristic length. Say probably electrical, again, p-n junction people use the same terminology. They'll call this the Debye length. And now those are two major potential interactions. The Van der Waals interaction and the electrostatic interaction. If we think about what this do to the surface, what does this do to the force? With the electrostatic potential and so here you got the positive, let's say you have positive ions. Here you got the negative ions, counter ion, right? They will attract to each other. My question is, why don't they just collapse onto each other? Right? Well, so there got to be a repulsion developing in the liquid. So you can do your force balance. You'll find that there's a pressure difference, pressure gradient, or counterbalance that. Okay? So in the electric double layer, you got the pressure gradient, counterbalance. So when you got two surfaces together, and each surface, all you have double layers, okay? And when they get very close, these two surfaces will become repulsive to each other. Okay? The pressure is no longer balanced at each surface, so this two surface becomes repulsive. So typically, when you have a solution, okay, you have solution that has particles inside. Now, between particle, you have Van der Waals interaction, right? We talk about Van der Waals, solid-solid interaction between solid surface. And that's usually attractive force. And so if we plot the potential, attractive potential and repulsive potential, and here is the attractive Van der Waals potential. And then the electrostatic potential, double layer potential, electric double layer potential, is repulsive. So repulsive potential. And, of course, it's a composition of both. What determines the force there? It's a composition. So you can say you can superimpose these two curves. What do you can get? You can get different situation. You can get a situation where this, if this drops very fast, so you can have this way. You can have this way, or you can have this way. Okay? And this is a metastable. If the particles fall into that minimum, energy minimum, that's a colloid. You form a metastable colloid. Because they don't, once they go above this barrier, the attraction force will just collapse everything. So just a purely van der Waals force, the particle will conglomerate, form a big blob, right? And if electrostatic force is strong enough, you maintain repulsive, so they don't, the double layer force is strong enough, they don't collapse into, agglomerate into big particles. So those are, we said if it's repulsive, so if you do heat transfer, there is a very interesting phenomenon, because Heimerger constant, even the van der Waals case, right? Van der Waals force, so the Heimerger constant can be negative. So you got you can have a repulsive force in the liquid or electric double layer here. You have repulsive. So what you can see is a situation where if you do an evaporation case, you have liquid that evaporate. So where typically this is a solid wall, liquid. So liquid and solid surface, typical surface tension will create a curvature here. Okay? But the real liquid doesn't just terminate at that surface tension. What it will have is actually a very long tail, probably few atomic layer thick. This is because the repulsive, you got a repulsive force here that just try to expand. So the thinner is the film, the more repulsive, right? So the thicker region is less repulsive. So you got a pressure imbalance that pushes the liquid to a longer tail. So you got this a pressure discontinuity. It's called disjoining pressure. In very, very thin membrane region, you can have disjoining pressure and you can have a longer, tail, much longer region where you got a film that's due to this disjoining pressure. Now, so given these two forces, what I'll discuss next, you can think about a lot of things. Sometimes people say, when you have liquid, whether you have in nanoscale region, whether you have slip flow or not. In gas case, in chapter 7 I mentioned, okay, when your gas flow across in the wall in the rarefied gas, you can have a difference between the gas molecule velocity and the wall. So you have a slip, right? So a lot of people do nanoscale liquid transport. They will see difference between their measurement and the classical theory, and they see some of this, I get a slip there, okay? But you can go there and do a, I give example. I don't believe there's slip. I give example in my book where I did the order of magnitude analysis. I don't do much research in liquid. How do I do order of magnitude analysis? I just say, if you want to have slip, again, think about force, right? So this is the solid surface, and you got the liquid atom there. I can go to estimate what's the interaction force, what's the potential force between the liquid atom and the solid surface. And from there, I can find out what's the bonding force between the liquid atom and solid surface. Right? My model, the example I gave in the book, it's just say, okay, these are the immovable solid atom. And I go to find out what's the potential if I have another atom interacting with it. So I would find out this bumpy summation, bumpy potential. And then I say, if I want to have a sleep, that means they have to overcome this potential, right? They have to overcome this potential. I will find out how much force it takes to overcome that potential. And at the end, given that shear stress, how much shear stress I need to overcome this potential, I conclude that it will never happen because you can't generate that much shear stress by pressure or whatever. You just see one, taking the liquid viscosity, taking 1 meter per second and change over 1 micron, how much shear stress you can generate. And most, you will see there are many order different magnitude difference between what's needed to drag and what can be generated. So that's just one comment. And the other comment is really, given this, you can go to think about the application. You don't have I don't think you have really sleep, but the fact is that you have mobile ions in the liquid, or your solid is charged, right? The fact that your solid is charged gives you the opportunity to manipulate the liquid or manipulate the solid in the liquid. Because it's charged, you can apply electrical field. So there is this big field of electrokinetics, right, where you have two basic situations. One is you got a particle or many particles in the liquid where this particle, because the electrical double layer is a positive charge and the surrounding liquid is a negative charge, right? So if I apply an external electrical field, okay, I put a voltage here into the solution, and you can see there will be, okay, force imbalance. The particle can be set into motion, right? So that's the electrophoretic flow. Let me just make sure my limb. I think that's called the electrophoretic flow. Yes. So you get the electrophoretic flow, and that's the principle people use in the DNA separation. Okay, DNA charged, you apply a voltage, they go through capillary tubes, and it depends on the charge, they will travel different distance. So they separate into DNAs. So that's very widely used in the biotechnology. And the other case is you can say if you have tools, if I have a channel, right? And channel solid is a positive charge, let's say, and liquid is a negative charge. Okay? So you apply voltage. In this case, the solid is stationary, your channel you fix on something, right? So again, you apply a voltage here. What happened? The ions in the liquid will move. The ions in the liquid moves, that will drag the liquid moving, right? So if you look at the velocity distribution, it's actually very nice. It's almost uniform because really in the double layer, only in the double layer you got this velocity change. That's very thin. So it's more like in fluid mechanics, this is a plug flow. Uniform velocity distribution across most of the cross section. So people use this a lot in pumping, electrokinetic pumping. You pump liquids from one place, transport liquid from one place to the other. And all of this, once you understand the basics of electrical double layer, you can do the analysis. And so that's one part, if you go, I'm going to zip you through the chapter line, okay? And yes?
So does that mean you bring the two
No, you can. Well, it depends on how close. People have even recently demonstrated that you go very close, you got a unipolar. Because normally, even in the liquid, you can still have both positive ion and negative ions. You just get an imbalance of them. But when you get pushed very close, you can get a unipolar liquid. It's like you don't put only one type of charge inside. So you can potentially have gating. People do gating. Okay, you have a liquid channel here. You have outside that you apply voltage. You can see you can change the surface charge, and that will change the flow. So you can control your fluids. So there are lots of innovations using those kind of for analysis, bioanalysis or chemical analysis, or microfluidics, and. The other thing I quickly mention is the surface tension. Right? So, surface tension, it's just to think of this as a surface energy. Right? When we know surface tension and membrane, so if you have a liquid surface, you increase the surface area, there will be increase of your surface energy, right? So what is surface tension? Surface tension, you typically think as a force, right? A force that eventually can be converted back into the energy. And this is really just the surface energy. So you can think about, think about solid, okay? You want to split the solid into two pieces, you have to do some work, right? That work, so they once you split, you get more work stored, energy stored in these two pieces than original one. And difference is the work of cohesion. So in that, so let's say if you the amount of work you need is W11, then the surface tension is just one half of W11. Right, because you created two surfaces, right? And if it's two different surface, you split it, you call that the work of adhesion. Okay, different surface. And so the surface tension could be calculated, actually, between two surface is R1 plus R2 minus square root of R1D, R2D, and D, this is just a van der Waals. So that R1D, R2D means you only consider van der Waals, the surface energy due to van der Waals force. And once you have the surface tension, then, the reason I mentioned surface tension is once you go to micro nano scale, as I said at the beginning of this course, the volumetric force decreases because the volumetric force is proportional to r cubic power, where surface force is proportional to r squared. So you got to say importance of volumetric force decrease, importance of surface force increase. So surface tension is very important. And then there are two laws really govern the govern the surface tension. One is, of course, if I have a sphere, I have the pressure difference P1 minus P2. Inside is larger than outside, so P1 minus P2 equals 2 sigma divided by R. Well, the sigma is the surface tension. Okay, so really I should just say sigma rather to distinguish from R. So this is Laplace equation, just a force balance. And the other equation is the Young equation, where you have a droplet, for example. Again, you do your force balance. You have three surfaces in this case, 1, 3, 2. So you got three surface tension between 2 and 3, between 1 and 3, and between 1 and 2. So you do your force balance, you'll find out the R1, 3 plus equals R 2 3 cosine theta plus R 1 2. So that's the Young equation. So sometimes people call Laplace Young equation as really by combining these two together. Okay, so that's a typical, this is a probably something you have seen before. And what's new? Once you go to nanoscale or microscale, this is again established results. It's a in that case, once you get the very small, you can see the pressure inside will be higher, right? So thermodynamically, if you have typically vapor case, vapor, if you have vapor liquid, you have equilibrium pressure, right? So, but inside the pressure, the droplet, the pressure is different from the equilibrium pressure. So your equilibrium thermodynamic property will change. Lots of thermodynamic property will change. The equilibrium pressure, the equilibrium temperature, enthalpy, surface tension, all those can have changed. And this one of this example, I think MIT professor Stephen Jacobson takes advantage, is the melting temperature. Melting temperature of nanoparticle typically smaller than bulk. That's due to this surface tension effect. Okay, and there are various kind of. You can go to read. Based on this, there are several Kelvin relations. Just using combination of Laplace equation and thermodynamics, you will get those different relationships. Your thermal definitely will change. I saw recently an experiment, one of my collaborators. He took a TEM of a carbon nanotube. He heat up to very high temperature bypassing current. What I say is the lattice spacing is beyond the range of graphite, melting point of graphite. I look at the graphite curve just beyond that. So that means your thermal expansion coefficient definitely will change. So with that, I think I will stop here. And this is a routine. I need somebody to bring to department office. Somebody bring to department office? Okay. ME department. Do you know where is the ME department? Just the first floor. First floor. This is a... So make a write-in. And so you know how to do it. And then bring to the ME department. But I have one additional request. Because Arvind is not official TA. And say we don't have... I'm not taking department money to pay him, research money, and I don't see there's a place you can write comments. I would appreciate somebody writing comments for TA, and just give it to him. I'm sure he'll appreciate that. And so you can, if you want, you can write the comments. If you don't want to write comments there, about me officially, you can also write. Because this is a course, you can see a lot of material, and my challenge is how to give you at the level, what's the starting point, I'm assuming what's the ending point. And very eager to hear your input. And this is the envelope. Anybody else have their term papers? I know a few of you have requested extension and granted, but if you have already, just give it to me. Okay. Thank you very much. Let me give this to you. So Arvind's comment, I think we have lab mates to him. Huyen, yeah. Could you bring Arvind, comments to Arvind back? This is okay.